Hey, welcome back to another episode of The Drawing Board. I'm Reed Osi. I'm your host. Today's podcast is also going to be hosted by Justin DeGruy. Justin works alongside of me at Catalyst Training and also is an assistant basketball coach at Gustavus Adolphus College in St. Peter. We have a very special guest on today. We were able to have a conversation with Sean Ford. Sean is the men's national team director with USA Basketball. Sean has been with USA Basketball for over 25 years. He has an incredible outlook on the game of basketball, not only from a national level, but just from a global level. He shares some great insights on that. He's got some awesome stories from his time with USA Basketball. I don't want to give away too much. So here's Sean Ford. All right, we are joined by men's national team director for USA Basketball, Sean Ford. Sean, thanks for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, you know, when I think of USA Basketball, you know, I think success, but I was thinking about today, it's not typically how I would think about success. You know, for example, Coach K at Duke is the active leader when it comes to NCAA winning percentage. In the NCAA tournament at 764. And I think on that stage, we would all consider that very successful. But from a winning percentage, that doesn't even appear to come close to what the expectations or what I think the expectations would be for Team USA at any level. You know, not only does Team USA basketball win, but USA basketball has just had this incredible culture of excellence that I think you've been able to help sustain for a long time. And I want to dig into that a little bit. You know, you've obviously been with USA Basketball for, I think, 25 years. If you could talk to us a little bit about what makes USA Basketball so unique from a standpoint of cultivating such a successful program.
Well, you know, when it comes down to sports, you know, what you really realize is that it all comes down to the players. You know, it all starts and ends with the players, mm-hmm. and then the coaches. And, you know, as a country, we have very, very good basketball players and we have very good basketball coaches. So we're very lucky. And we're very fortunate. You know, that's probably the, you know, it all starts there. You know, and the other thing about USA Basketball compared to most other teams that compete and that play is that in our country, we're a single entity. We're a one of a kind. We don't compete with anyone in our country in a way, you know, so it, the uniqueness of it, you know, good, bad, whatever, it's reality, you know, so, you know, a lot of people want to be a part of us. And so, and then because it's an organization that represents the country, it really, in a way, belongs to everyone. Mm-hmm. So anyone who works here, anyone who plays here, anyone who coaches here, anyone who's part of a staff is, you know, just temporary. You know, I've been here a long time, but I'm temporary too. You know, I took over for people and someone will take over for me. And, you know, we don't necessarily own it. It's not about us, you know? And so that's at the core, that's really what it's kind of about. If that makes sense, that's the way we look at it. And, you know, we're incredibly lucky when we're, you know, as a country of, you know, the good players that we have. And, you know, it is, yeah, we are, we don't look at it as that we're favored. It's just that, you know, yeah, we have a high expectation, but it's an appropriate expectation. We should have a high expectation.
Yep.
You know, we have a lot of resources. We have a lot of good players. We have some things that other people don't have. You know, so that's kind of the way it starts. And then you want other people to own it. You want to share it. You know, this is something that you want everyone to experience it. It's a really good level of basketball. It's advanced basketball because you're dealing with, you know, high-end coaches and high-end players. And, you know, you bring up the culture. It's a level of discipline and a level of acceptance that you have here that it leads to sacrifice. It leads to, you know, people wanting to just do what it takes. And When they leave here after an experience, they realize it's about winning and losing, and people don't worry about how many minutes. No one gets asked how many minutes you played or how many points did you have. You know, it's just that did you win? Did you win the gold? Did you do it? You know, and people know that that's part of it. The other really unique thing about it is that from a beginning to end for us, we have all the normal ups and downs of a team, but it's kind of like on steroids because usually a season is going to start in, you know, October, November, you know, and it's going to go till March, or an NBA season goes longer. You know, the Olympics is 40 days. The junior competitions are between, you know, 23 and 28 days.
Yeah.
And so, and then when the team's over, it's over. It'll never be assembled again, not in the same capacity. Mm-hmm. You know, even if you have, we've never had all the coaches, all the players back for a second team. There's always changes. And we also, everyone pretty much who plays for USA Basketball, we're their second team. They have another team that they play on. And in for high school now, we're actually their third team, because most elite high school players have a travel team that they play on and a traditional basketball season prep school or high school that they play on.
Yep.
So those unique things all factor into the specialness of it. But, we have to do certain things to, like, we can never lose sight that it's all about the players, but we also have to hold them accountable, you know, and not them accountable. I shouldn't say it that way. Everyone has to hold each other accountable, you know, so it's not like, hey, we got to hold the players need to hold us accountable. They need to demand the best from us, and we need to demand the best from the coaches, and the coaches need to, you know, all those things. But when you have when you have elite people doing things and they're holding each other accountable, you know, you can accomplish great things.
Hey, Sean, if you could speak to a little bit, you mentioned sacrifice, some selflessness, obviously within the players. And then I would imagine it's the same thing with the coaching staff. Talk a little bit about how you're able to evaluate and really form these teams with, like you said, some of the best players, obviously, in the country at all ages, but it's not always necessarily the very best players. I very much think it's, you know, about trying to find the right group of guys and ladies that fit together to form the best team.
You know, that is the case. I mean, you... people want to be committed to winning. And, you know, nowadays it gets harder and harder. Life is hard these days, you know, not just the pandemic, but, you know, kids, it's harder to be in high school today than it was 10 years ago. And that was harder than it was, you know, before. And, you know, to give of yourself, you know, and to, you know, because everyone has, you know, what's interesting about basketball, I think, is that elite players, like we deal with elite players, they're, of any sport, they're probably identified. The someone who has the tools to be an elite player can be identified at a very early age, separate than any other sport, because they're probably because of their length of their bodies and their athleticism, and they, it's hard to hide. You know, you're longer. You know, and you can just see, like, wow, that person. I mean, you can look at someone who has like an NBA body type at eighth and ninth grade. I mean, we all know it kind of now. And so it doesn't mean that you're going to the NBA, but it means that, you know, you got some tools in your toolbox that could probably take you to a certain place. It's just what you do with it. So, you know, in terms of evaluating people, but you also, like, the mind is really important and how committed people are to the sport. And, you know, it's, you get a team together. What's hard is you almost have two units, and because you want to play hard, but usually people don't play you know, 20, they play 24, 25 minutes in a 40 minute game for us, you know, and you're going to end up, you know, usually having about 7 or 8 guys that play at least 18 minutes. You know, you get minutes, and that's what, and the more you move the ball, the more everyone gets to touch it, the more everyone's, you know, kind of figuring it out. And, you know, we've had a lot of teams where some of our best players came off the bench because, you know, they could very easily be a starter. But, you know, we usually, as a team, when we're really successful, our second units are the ones that have the biggest margin of, you know, positive points. Because they, the first group has created a pace, they've created a physicality of the game, and they're playing against, you know, and our unit is sometimes they're just as athletic or maybe even more so, and we find that we go small in the second unit. So I say all that because, like, in 2008, you know, we had a great Olympic team. It was a great team. And so you're coming in with Jason Kidd at the point guard, and you got Dwight Howard at the center. So you got 3 other spots, and you got Kobe, LeBron, Carmelo, and Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade was just coming off injury, and Coach K kind of, you know, thought, like, you know, Dwayne should really play with the second unit. He would dominate the second unit, will be really good. And he talked to Dwayne, and Dwayne came off the bench. Well, Dwayne ended up being our leading scorer, you know, coming off the bench. Sure. And he was unstoppable. He was a force. But at the same time, you know, when the Spain game was on the line, he was on the court, even though he didn't start. So it's, you know, it's the old adage. It doesn't matter if you start. It's just that, are you going to finish? You know, and then fast forward 4 years later, same conversation was with Carmelo Anthony. Carmelo didn't start, leading scorer for the Olympic team. And it's, you know, you see that it's not the only time it happened. Colin Sexton plays with the Cavaliers now, 19 and under. He came off the bench, and he ended up being the MVP of the U-17 World Championship. Yep. You know, Aaron Gordon in 2003 came off the bench, and he was the MVP of the U-19 World Championship. You know, so it's very, you know, it's normal for our teams. It's all about matchups, but you just want people, you know, who are committed and want to make winning plays.
Now, and this is just fascinating to think about, and, you know, especially in my world where, you know, college basketball and, you know, obviously not to the degree, there's not as many great players, right? And so obviously you don't get to the level of USA basketball without having at least some sense of ego, some sense of pride, confidence in yourself, right? And so is it much of an issue for guys, you know, trying to buy into a role that these guys have probably never played ever in their life, dating back to, you know, 5th, 6th grade? And if so, you know, is it once they've been part of the team, you know, the next time around, it's easier for them because they've been around the process? Speak to that if you could.
You know what? I think there's a couple of things with that. I think that there's a lot of expectation on players these days, you know, and, you know, what it all comes from is you have to build trust with players. You have to build trust. And yeah, how does that happen? I don't know, you know, in a way that's not in a book, but it's based upon relationships, and it's based upon, you know, if they need something, trying to help them. And if they need some guidance, or if they need, you know, like, hey, how you doing today? You know, just know it. And some of it these days, I think some of the trust can be created by not wanting anything from them. You know, because, you know, like we want you to play. And like, we always say, like, hey, like, our job is to have players play and coaches coach, and we'll take care of everything else. And, you know, players can sometimes just gravitate to someone who isn't trying to get something from them. And we never try to take anything from the players. We want to give them opportunity and then help them. And our biggest thing is we want to, you know, win with them, and we want them to want to come back and play with us again. I mean, that's right. really what it comes down to. So I think that's, if that helps a little bit, but you know, you have to, if you're going to challenge a player, you know, to and push a player in an appropriate way, you have to have trust first. Okay. Because then it's not real. And then you're maybe doing it like out of fear, or you're doing it by trying to have something over him, as opposed to like, hey, I'm challenging you because I think you're capable of more and I want to help you get there. So I'm going to challenge you, but I'm not going to leave you alone. I'm going to help you get there. But at the same time, Coach K, he had a great line, you know, when he dealt with those players in 2008, you know, he said, you know, and I remember him, you know, had a conversation with Kobe, but all of the guys, he said, look, people always say like, leave your ego at the door, right? He goes, no, we don't leave your ego at the door. We need your ego, because your ego is what makes you great. It just has to be an appropriate ego. You know, don't think that you're better than someone, but know how good you are and bring that and be that person.
Yep.
You know, and sometimes people's ego are based on the expectation that others have of them. And sometimes the expectation, unfortunately, for people that are still developing, elite level high school players, that expectation is, you know, where they're going to get to someday. So it's based on potential as opposed to where they are now. And they feel like they should already be there. And we try to, you know, teach the players that it's okay to fail. It's okay to not, you know, to be good, because that's how you get better, you know, because you got to figure out like, all right, how good am I? Because you got to, you know, it's like I like you guys, I don't know if you ski at all, but, you know, I like to go skiing. And I always say to people like, you know, if you're trying to become a better skier and you ski all day and you don't fall down, you're not skiing hard enough. You know, it doesn't mean you're a bad skier if you fall down, but like you got to push yourself maybe to the limit. You know, it's like if you're going to work out really hard and you end up not being out of breath at some point, you didn't work out hard enough.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, you know, that's a little bit like it, but you know, from an ego standpoint, we want people's egos. We want their swagger. You know, we want them, you know, to bring what they have, but you know, it's got to be appropriate, and you know, you can't be afraid to fail.
Yeah. But
a lot of people don't want, they think failure is a sign of weakness, you know, and it's not necessarily a sign of weakness. I mean, you know, and when I say fail, it's not like, it's not just winning and losing, but in a particular play, if you don't score and you get your shot blocked, you know, or if you miss an open jump shot, or if you, you know, you can get down, it's like, no, just keep going. Don't worry about it.
Go ahead. No, what I was going to say is what I think is very interesting is you talk about the relationship building piece. And I look back to whether it is the national team, your Olympic team, or like your younger level teams, that how you've had guys like Coach K, a college coach, coaching the NBA guys. Well, sometimes at the younger levels, you have guys with some NBA experience as the head coach. I find that fascinating that's how you pick the coaches. If you could talk a little bit about that too.
Well, you know, look, one of the things Coach K said, you know, his thing was, he went into it with a mentality that it's easier for one person to change for 12 than for 12 different people to change for one. Hmm. You know, that was his mentality coming in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's he understood, these players don't, coaching has many different aspects of it, of what it is. You know, sometimes it's drawing up plays. Sometimes it's looking at fundamentals. Sometimes it's motivating. Sometimes it's managing. And look, in this case, you know, he didn't need to like, hey, Kobe, let me go work on your jump shot. Right. You know, that wasn't, but he knew how to manage them as people and as players, and build their trust. And then he when he needed to coach them, he was able to coach them because he built up that trust and that's very, you know, he was really good. He was really good. And, you know, Coach Pop is terrific, you know, he's great at building trust and having fun with the players and, you know, really getting to understand them and know who they are and them know who he is. And trust is just, it's so important. It's incredibly important. But it's, you know, it gets harder and harder. You know, it really does at all levels of basketball because there's just an awful lot of expectation out there.
Yeah, well, the thing that I, you know, I keep hearing you say, and it's so powerful for me as a, you know, college basketball coach right now. And it's, you know, something that, you know, you try to remind yourself of and stay cognizant of and certainly believe it and live it is, you know, the relationship piece. I mean, you're talking about these coaches and, you know, what you're talking about right now is we haven't talked about X's and O's once. You know, with these guys, and it's about managing relationships and building relationships. And I think, you know, it's spot on and so powerful what you're saying about, you know, if these guys know that you look at them as a person before the player, the likelihood is you're going to get the best of them, whatever the situation is, whether that's on the floor or off of the floor. You know, and that's to say, you know, same thing, obviously that we have with our, you know, college guys here. And my guess is it's the same thing at fifth and sixth grade. If you're coaching kids at that level, there's just that human piece of it, that relationship piece, that, you know, and that obviously goes beyond sport too. And the reason why I bring that up, Sean, is you talk a little bit about that aspect of it with just working for USA Basketball. We don't even, you know, talking about the players, you've been at a place now for 20 plus years, which is really impressive regardless of the organization or the company or whatever it is. But there's got to be, I would imagine, a piece of that filters in throughout all pieces of just USA Basketball as a whole.
Yeah. You know, we slowly build it. You know, I don't know what the it is, but, you know, you understand we're ever evolving. You know, it's like we've had to reinvent ourselves a couple times, but, you know, it's hard to be, you know, too proactive. We have to adjust to so many different things over time. You know, there was a time when it seemed, I mean, when I first started this, you know, my first team that it's really funny. The first team I ever traveled with, remember, it was really exciting for me. It was 1995 and got on a plane and went to spring, flew into Hartford and went to Springfield, Massachusetts for the, we were having the first ever Hoop Summit game. You know, it was the very first one as part of the Hall of Fame inductions in 1995. And Kevin Garnett and Stephen Marbury were playing.
Oh, you're speaking our language as Minnesota boys now, Sean. Right. Come on, let's go.
Well, Kevin was in high school at the time. And what was really funny is that and they were wondering whether he was going to declare for the draft or not right out of high school. And what was really funny is I remember watching it on ESPN. And then what's funny is the next day we drove down to Springfield for a tour of ESPN with the team. And we got to sit on the SportsCenter set. Mm-hmm. Kevin was sitting on the SportsCenter set where like literally like the night before they were wondering whether he was going to go pro or not. It was like the third week of May. And it's like ESPN didn't even know he was in the building. So it was really kind of funny to think back, yeah. Now, you know? And, you know, so like, but, you know, you think back of, you know, those times and those people, you know, it was, you know, really special, you know, but that was weird. It was weird. Now it's a normal thing, you know, like they want to go to high school kids and, you know, the one and done rule. And that just, it changes a lot of things. We used to be 18, 19, and then 20 and 21. Then they stopped doing the 20 and 20. 1 year olds and then started doing 15, 16 and 17 year olds in 09 and 10. So we had to totally adjust. We used to, the youngest we would ever deal with was a senior in high school. Now we're dealing with freshmen and sophomores in high school and actually looking at eighth graders. You know, you just, you know, all those things just changed so much. And then the international game got so much better. And, you know, we couldn't just pick 12 and, you know, play a couple games and roll out and blow team, you know, like, and win games, you know, that all changed. So now we, you know, we have a program and now we have a qualifying system for the World Cup. And, you know, now, you know, if you're, you know, we used to go to the World University Games and the Pan Am Games with college players. Now those players, they can't compete because they're playing against grown men in those competitions. And if, you know, like I always say, if you, you know, it used to be that if you scored 1,000 points in college or 2,000 points in college, you were like almost going to the Hall of Fame. Like you were a great, great player. Now you're an average player in college because if the good players don't stick around long enough to score 1,000 points.
Yeah.
They're gone. And it's interesting how that, you know, if you're a junior or senior and you're still, it's very unlikely that, you know, you're, you know, very few seniors are drafted in the first round and that used to be only seniors. So I just say all that because like our worlds change all the time. So we have to just be very flexible and nimble and try to predict what might happen. But again, it all comes down to figuring out a way to get the best players.
Yeah. And did I hear you correct that, I mean, someone within USA Basketball is out obviously evaluating, talking to, figuring out eighth graders? Is that kind of when it starts?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, we've never really had an eighth grader come to a camp, mm-hmm. but there are elite level camps out there.
Sure.
That, you know, we'll try to get someone there just to see, you know, because that like that's where they're coming from.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. Well, you know, look, we knew about Tyus Jones when he was an eighth grader starting, you know,
yeah.
varsity, you know, yep. we knew about him starting varsity at eighth grade. So, you know, he came in, he won 3 gold medals for us before he even played at Duke.
Yep. That guy's got a lot of hardware. I think he wins just about everywhere he goes.
Yeah, he's great.
You know, one thing that I listened to another podcast that you were on, and you talked about the pace of the international game. I think you talked about that pace doesn't always mean fast. It doesn't mean that you're always driving the car 100 miles an hour, but you can slow it down. You know, I work with a lot of guys that play overseas.
I don't do many podcasts, so that's pretty good research on your part.
Yeah, well,
was that the played at Gonzaga?
I think it was the Dan Dickow one. But yeah, I think it's super fascinating because working with a lot of guys overseas, when I first started doing the training stuff, guys would catch the ball and they're like, I'm not allowed to do this. This is a rip through. A rip through is a travel. It has to be a cross step. Different things like that from a rule standpoint, but also like the pace of play that, you know, it's not super fast, but it's just consistent.
The hardest thing about when you talk about pace is it's almost like there's a minimum speed.
Yep.
You know, that's what people don't realize is that, you know, okay, you may not be going 50 miles an hour, you're going 40, but you're never going below 30 either.
Yeah.
And I think that's what that's really, I think the key to pace is, you know, the minimum speed. It never really slows down to a, you know, a lot of times, you know, like it just, teams will dribble up and then someone just stands there for a couple seconds. Like that doesn't happen internationally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'd love, like a lot of times it's amazing. I always think that how many times, like, you know, you're watching a great pace game when, you know, the ball passes over half court on a pass rather than a dribble,
mm-hmm.
you know, and like, you just like, if you're playing and the ball is like passed forward over half court, like, you know, you're playing that's a nice pace.
Yeah. It's gotta be difficult to get kids. You're introducing, like in Minnesota, there's no shot clock at the high school level. So when you get all these Minnesota kids, not only are you introducing things like a shot clock, which is a, you know, a foreign object to them, but you're also talking different rules. And
that's a little bit of, you know, it's part of the teaching of the game that we're trying to kind of get better at. And I've you know, people here I've learned from, and just amazing, and learned a lot from Jeff Van Gundy when he coached a bunch of our teams. And I think one of the things that allows you to have a pace is when you're thinking the game and you don't have to call plays. You know, so when you're when you get the rebound and everyone knows that they're running to an area, and based upon where the point guard dribbles the ball, they know how to maneuver from there, and all of a sudden it's dictated. And so you're instinctively making basketball decisions based on the where the ball is, where your teammates are, and how people cut.
Yeah, the game is a beautiful thing when intuition drives the game.
Yes, and you know, offensive moves are dictated by the defensive positioning of where their footwork is, what they're trying to take away, because they can't take away everything, you know. And so it's that's where flow comes in, you know. But when you're coming up, and then like you, you get, you know, you want to, you have a like a mini transition, and then you don't get it, and then you pull back, right? Like, you never retreat. You know, keep going through and go right into it. You know, you don't, Jeff had a great line. You don't run the floor to run offense. You run the floor to score. You know, and so, you know, that's so all that, like, that's the type of the beat. But you see a lot of people, like, they pull it out and then they're, you know, kind of where you keep it going. And that's what we're trying to do with the players, you know, and have that type of continuity and that type of flow to the game is really good, because internationally, one way that we can really take advantage is, you know, we're a little bit longer, we're a little bit more athletic. And so if we can take advantage of mismatches, that's what we try to do.
With the international game, and I don't know exactly where it stands now, but for a longest time, I felt like a lot of people, and I think rightfully so, are complimenting international players and programs on skill level, right? Like, they felt like they might have been maybe not as athletic, maybe not as big, to your point, but their skill was just so good. You know, the best in the world. From your perspective, do you feel like that gap has shrunk? Do you feel like that was a fair, view early on?
There's fairness to that comment for sure. Like, I always say, you know, like, if people want to golf, right? Skiing, a little bit, same thing. Like, usually you don't like just pick up golf and go out and golf. You usually start with a lesson, right? And or skiing, you don't just go get skis and I'm going to go. You usually start with a lesson, where a lot of times basketball, people just pick it up and they start playing. And then when they got to go back and get the lesson, because they have a lot of bad habits, right? If you really want to be elite. What we've talked about is, you know, we want to try to have like athleticism and that be a luxury, not a necessity to win. You know, we want to try to figure out a way, can we win the international game with skill and, you know, and execution? And then if you have that, and then you throw in athleticism, then it just gets a little bit easier, you know, as opposed to just, hey, let's just be the most athletic and we'll try to be more athletic than them. Then it's a toss up to be like, who's going to overpower the other? Is athleticism going to win over, skill and execution? And, you know, our thing is let's be skilled and let's work on our execution. And then, you know, a little athleticism and then we're off to the races. But the skill level, you know, it's significant. You know, they're smart players. They're drilled a lot, you know, and they play a lot. So yeah, it's different. It's an interesting, but I agree with that. I mean, skill is, it's hard to, I still like to think about it a little bit more and try to figure out some better words. I think there's a better way to describe it. I'm just not sure what that is. And I mean by that is there's so much individual workouts, you know, and everyone, so that's, it's like a skill all, you know, you're inside out and you're dribbling your shots and all that. Like, everyone takes these, you know, shots that are hard to guard, but they've practiced it a lot. So, even though it looks unorthodoxed, you know, elite players usually don't take shots in a game that they haven't practiced. You know, that's really, you know, even though it looks unusual. But, you know, there's a level of skill that is outside from an individual workout, you know, and it's the skill of understanding the game and having the, you know, the defense dictate what offensive move you make. So it's not like I'm going to do this. The best players are the ones that, you know, don't necessarily have tendencies. You know, if you're, you know, you just say like, what's his tendency? Well, like, you know, it all depends how you play him. Like, that's like the ultimate compliment for an offensive player.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's kind of interesting. So I think of that, the skill level of teams. I remember the Argentina team that we played against in the 04 Olympics, when they won the Olympics, they were like a machine offensively. I felt like Pepe Sanchez. I don't know if you remember him, left-handed point guard from Temple. He was their point guard. Ginobili was on the team, and they had Luis Scola and Berto. Like, they were really good. But they all cut all the time, constantly. And every time someone went through the lane, you thought the play was for them. Like, they cut so hard, and it was almost like the belly option in football, where you put the ball in the fullback's belly and then you just read your keys. It's like they just read your keys, and it was really hard to guard. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a level of skill you know, that I think is really, really important. I think like cutting is, you know, I saw a great stat, the Miami Heat. I forget how it went, but I listened to it during the finals. Someone said the Miami Heat led the league with baskets off cuts, which I thought was like a stat. I didn't even know it was kept, yeah. But that cutting was so hard. You know, Villanova, when they won their championship, I think it was 18. The player who plays for the Bucks now,
Diacono.
DiVincenzo.
DiVincenzo, yeah.
I thought he was like, he got three or four baskets a game just by cutting.
Yeah.
You know, and I just think that like cutting is, John Thompson had a great line that a good cut is almost better than a good screen. Mm-hmm. And I thought, and like Damon Lillard was on a podcast with our, we have a junior national team, high school kids, and we've been doing Zooms with them once a month. And we had Damon Stoudemire on last Wednesday night. He was terrific. He stayed on for an hour and a half with these kids. It was awesome. And what he was, one of the things that he said is that, I won't do it justice, but the summary of it is, you know, he doesn't use his skill and athleticism until usually late in the game, in the fourth quarter or the last part of the fourth quarter. He said, because the rest of the game, I'm just playing the game. He goes, I know what I'm supposed to do on every play, but I also know what every one of my teammates is supposed to do on every play. Mm-hmm. And I know what all the other teams' plays are. And I know all the tendencies of all the other players. And so I am just using all of that knowledge to make plays that work, because I know what everyone else is supposed to be doing. And when they call out a play, thumbs up, and I just say, hey, they're running our fist. Like, we just know. And I know if a backup center comes in the game that I know that we can attack, then we're calling them out and we're putting them in a pick and roll. There's a wing that I know is a poor defender, we're attacking him. And that has nothing to do with my ability as an athlete to put the ball in the basket. And, you know, and then, you know, things tighten up late in the game, and then it's kind of winning time somewhat. You still use those things, but at that point, everyone's kind of established their position in the game. And at the end of the game, if it's close, all the good players are in. And then it's, you know, man on man kind of thing. And then you got to see. But I just thought it was really good for those high school players, you know, to hear this. Like, you know, you come in the game and you're deficient, we know what you can't do, and we're attacking you, and everybody knows it. And that's like, that's a trait that you know, the earlier you can learn, you know, you can teach people that, you know, but if people are trying, if they're still worried about like, you know, hey, I did the pump shot, two dribbles to the right, you know, take the jump shot. And I did that 100 times last night. So now I get in the game, I'm going to catch. Now I'm doing the same thing, mm-hmm. even though the guy's standing right there, or there's someone's open under the basket or something. Like, you know, I think I tell even like I have, you know, young kids. And now I even see the game a little bit, you know, I've literally like 8-year-old twins and a 10-year-old daughter. And even they're playing soccer and even flag football. And I see that in the course of the season, the first game, everything is like, in, you know, fast forward for them. They see all this stuff going on and they can't like, they get all. And now like towards the end of the season, things are, it's slowing down for them a little bit. You know, I always think like in the game of basketball, when you look at the court and you're seeing it in slow motion, when the game is slowed down for you, you know, you can really be effective.
And I love that you brought up the Miami Heat. And I think so often when we talk about skill, we immediately think of what happens when the ball's in your hand.
Yeah. Right?
I think when watching the finals, especially, and even the games leading up to the finals, just watching the Heat, and you talk about Tyler Hero and you talk about Duncan Robinson, I could have watched those two guys and their activity off of the ball all day long. And I think you're exactly right in that skill, the ability to move without the ball, to make the correct reads. I mean, those guys are getting locked and trailed and hugged all over the place. They're getting ran off screens and ran off the line. But their ability to understand, A, how to get themselves open off of screens, but then to your point of what they're doing, they might not be wide open because of it, but that screener might be open or the weak side action might be open because everybody else is so focused on what they're doing. And that's all, you know, under some sort of umbrella of skill, but I don't think that that's what people think of immediately when they think of skill.
And I think that's a little bit of like, we're turning skill into like individual workouts a little bit in our country. But I think when we talk about skill as an international player, we there's a skill of the skill of what you can do with the ball, but also there's the skill of understanding the game and what you can do without the ball.
Yeah.
And that's what I think maybe we don't give them enough credit for.
Sure.
The other thing that's interesting to your point, though, is this is how the game's changed so much. And Steph Curry, and like, it's great. You love watching them play. But there was a time when they couldn't do, like, you can't touch a player now, even when he doesn't have the ball. So the timing that they have and that they practice is so, it's perfect because they're not getting touched. You used to not be able to go through the lane. Right. Without getting just by, and internationally you can get touched.
Yeah.
Right. So you're, and that timing is very disruptive to shooters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something as simple as bumping a cutter. It's amazing how that has changed the game drastically. Yeah. Just one single rule of bumping a cutter.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. But yeah, I love watching Miami Heat. I think what, if anything, it taught people like, hey, look, if I can put them all in the basket, doesn't matter where I came from, doesn't matter how old I am, doesn't matter if I went to college, doesn't matter. Like, if I can put the ball in the basket, I can play this game anywhere.
No doubt.
I think about, you know, you just said how the game has changed. Is there a player that sticks out to you that prior to their first international competition that has maybe come back and then you see them later play, whether it's in their NBA season, where it's like, man, I can tell that this experience like vastly changed their game. Is there any, that might be a difficult question.
It's an interesting one. I mean, there's some players that really, well, you know, what's interesting is it's really the ones, what comes to mind for me are the ones that like, I feel like grew up with USA Basketball once we started you in the 16s and 17 under teams. And I say that because then, you know, you have like, you know, look, Tyus Jones, Jahlil Okafor, Justice Winslow, Stanley Johnson, you know, those, and even Aaron Gordon, right? If they were all at the same training camp, all five of those guys, when they were 16 years old, you know, and four of the five of them made the team. Justice didn't make the team. And then the next year, they're all on the team except Aaron Gordon. He had a bad foot. So the four of them win gold medals. That was like, you know, literally 11, 12. Then the next year is 13. And Tyus didn't play because his grandmother had passed away. He was supposed to, but the other four played on the 19 and under team. Okay. And then the next year, 18 and under, right? So this, again, we go from 19 to 18. So this is 11, 12, 13, 14. We're 18 under team. Justice doesn't play. Aaron Gordon and Jahlil don't play. They're too old, but Stanley Johnson, Winslow, and Tyus play. You know, so that four-year stretch, you know, granted, none of them had played a college basketball game yet.
Yeah, true.
You know, and so that is where, like, when you say, like, and then to watch those guys, like, I remember, you know, they're all freshmen at Duke, and Duke played the Big East, ACC Big East Challenge at Wisconsin when they were freshmen. You guys may remember that game. And they won at Wisconsin. Wisconsin was really good. And it was like they all played with such poise, and they kept on saying, like, I remember they actually had, like, the Sports Center set was at Wisconsin. And I was just watching, I was thinking to myself, like, they just don't know that, like, these guys are really experienced players. I mean, they've been playing elite Yes. level basketball for a long time. I mean, Tyus Jones, he played at that point before the Wisconsin game, played five seasons of varsity basketball and was on four different USA teams, you know, so that, like, playing against Wisconsin as a freshman was not that big of a deal.
It's almost old hat at that yeah, point,
you know? And so, as you say, like, when you watch, and the other example of that is, like, you know, Jason Tatum, same thing, Jason Tatum, you know, he was Terrence Ferguson, like, well, those guys did that type of stuff, and they were just, you know, awesome. You know, Jalen Green, who's you know, on the G League team right now, same type of thing. Jalen Suggs, you guys, I'm sure, are familiar with.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know if that totally answers your question, but that's what you see, is the consistency, and then you go and watch these players. To see Jason Tatum as a 16-year-old, you know, be at a camp as a freshman, and just say, like, wow, that, like, his body, he's going to fill out. He's going to be a really heck of a player. And he did.
You were, yeah, you guys were right.
Yeah. It was pretty easy. Pretty easy.
You know, I think about that. I think Tyus too also won, like, an AAU national championship with Howard Pulley. So, like, playing on the big stage was nothing new. I had the opportunity this summer to spend some time in the gym with Paige Beckers, and you know, Paige being at UConn, I think, you know, Paige being at UConn, playing at such a high level, having that international experience, my conversations with Paige, you know, what drives you? You're number one player in the country, number one player in the world. You've won, you know, all these awards. What drives you? And she, I just want to be the greatest women's basketball player of all time. I think that experience from a maturity standpoint is huge.
Yeah, I would agree. I totally.
Yeah, no,
it's phenomenal.
No, you know, we don't want to take up too much of your time. We really appreciate you taking some time to come on.
I hope this is helpful. It's kind of an interesting conversation. I don't know if it was what you guys were looking for, but
no, this is
we could do, Sean, we could do this all day, every day. Are you kidding me?
Yep. No, this has been fantastic. So we do appreciate your time, and okay, we wish you the best of luck going forward.
Okay, no problem.
Awesome, care, Sean. All appreciate it, man.
All right, see you.
All right, thanks. Be well.
Bye-bye.